Chapter 4. Brunei. They rose from the sea like modern-day castles, protected by the largest moat in the world. Slab-sided and immense, oil rigs mounted atop massive pilings dotted the ocean, with tall flare stacks belching tons of greasy flame. One sweep of the horizon revealed 24 of the monstrosities, while hundreds more were just over the Earth's curve. The huge oil fields made this tiny sultanate on the north coast of the island of Borneo one of the richest countries in the world, and its ruler one of the wealthiest individuals. Above the rigs, choppers ferried men and material to production and drilling platforms, while sturdy workboats plied the seas between them. One such chopper, a little Robinson R-22, belonged to the oil ministry and was carrying an inspector out to one of the larger rigs for its annual going over. His name was Abdullah. As was common in this part of the world, he had no last name. Slight and just 26 years old, he was new to the job, this being only his third such inspection. In truth, he wouldn't be performing the main search. Another team would be following in a couple of hours. His job was to gather and collate the mountains of paperwork required by the ministry for each of the rigs in their territorial waters. It was scut work that befitted his rookie status. But he knew he'd be amply rewarded once he'd put in his years. Senior inspectors made six-figure salaries and lived in mansions with servants and a driver. He wore heavy-duty coveralls, despite the fact that he wouldn't see anything much beyond the rig's administrative office, and he held a plastic hard hat on his lap. As required, his boots had steel-reinforced toes. Wouldn't want them crushed in a paper avalanche. The pilot hadn't said more than 10 words to Abdullah since taking off. So, when he heard a sound coming through his radio earmuffs, he turned to see if the man was speaking to him. To his horror, he saw the pilot clutching at the side of his head. With no one holding the controls, the 2-seat chopper started moving violently downward. For a fleeting instant, Abdullah thought the pilot, a veteran by the look of him, was having fun at the expense of a newbie inspector. But then the man simply slumped over against his door, his body held somewhat erect by his safety belts. The Robinson started to rotate on its axis. Abdullah surprised himself by remembering the rudimentary training he'd received. He grabbed the stick and the collective control down by his side and placed his feet on the pedals. He gently applied opposite pressure on the foot bar to correct the spin and gave the aircraft more power to gain altitude. After about 15 seconds, he had the helicopter somewhat steadier, but by no means was it flying as well as it had under a real pilot's control. He glanced at the pilot. The man remained slumped over, and while he had yet to start losing color, Abdullah knew that he was dead. The way he'd grabbed at his head made Abdullah think the older man had suffered a massive stroke. Sweat trickled down Abdullah's forehead as a lump swelled in his stomach. The rig they were heading for was still 30 miles away, while their base was 25 miles behind him. He had no illusions that he could keep the aircraft flying for that long. His only option was to attempt to land on one of the nearby platforms.
Mayday, 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 he called out,
not knowing if the radios were set on the right frequency, not even knowing if his headset could access the radio. There was no reply. When he scanned the instrument panel to see what he could do, he lost concentration momentarily, and the helicopter began to rotate again. Panicked, he overcompensated, losing altitude the whole time. The altimeter showed he was at 500 feet, but the ocean seemed to surge just below the landing skids. He eased his grip on the controls, remembering that flying helicopters was all about finesse.
The light touch, the instructor had said over and over during his 2-day tutorial. Though he wasn't allowed to solo, Abdullah had landed an identical helo exactly twice, and both times the instructor's hands had never been more than a millimeter from the controls. Once he had stabilized the chopper, he looked out across the sea for the nearest oil rig. Uniformly, they all had landing pads either on top of the accommodations block or, more commonly, cantilevered over the ocean. To his dismay, he was in one of the few regions of the oil and gas field that wasn't currently being worked. He saw only one rig, about 3 miles away. He recognized it as an older semi-submersible. Below its four stout legs and under the water were two enormous pontoons that could be filled or emptied via computer control. Such a rig could be towed to any location in the world. Once there, the ballast tanks could be filled to stabilize it, and anchors set on the seafloor to keep it in place. The platform was quite possibly abandoned. He saw no telltale plume of fire spewing from the vent stack, and as he got closer, he noted the rust and peeling paint. It wouldn't matter, he realized. Once he was down, he could devote his full attention to the radio and call for help. Amid the monochromatic gray paint scheme was a faded yellow circle enclosing a yellow letter H. This was the rig's landing pad, a steel platform hanging 100 feet over the water. The pad wasn't solid, but rather was a grill that allowed the chopper's downdraft to pass through, thus making it easier to land. Abdullah coaxed the little Robinson closer and closer. There was no movement on the deck, no roughnecks working on the drilling floor, no one coming out of the accommodations block to see who was approaching. It was a ghost rig. He brought the helo to an unsteady hover, slowly easing off the power so it sank down toward the platform. He praised Allah that there was no wind to contend with. Keeping a helicopter in a hover required the same skill and coordination as balancing a ping-pong ball on a paddle. A cross breeze would have been deadly. The chopper waggled and wiggled as he brought it lower. He wished he could wipe the sweat from his palms. They were slick on the controls, and a bead of perspiration dangled from the end of his nose. When he thought he was about 4 feet from the landing platform, he chopped the power dramatically. But in his unfamiliarity with judging vertical distances through the plexiglass bubble at his feet, he was closer to 10. The Robinson slammed onto the deck hard enough to bounce it into the air again, and when it did, it tilted over onto its side. The rotor blades smashed into the steel grill and splintered, bits of them peppering the sea far below. The chopper's hull crashed to the deck on its side and fortunately remained still. Had it rolled, it would have plunged off the platform. Abdullah didn't know how to shut off the engines. His only concern was getting out of the aircraft. Everyone who watched as many action movies as he had knew that cars, airplanes, and helicopters always exploded following a crash. He clicked off his safety belts and climbed over the inert form of the pilot, fear overcoming his revulsion at actually touching a corpse. The four-cylinder Lycoming engine continued to squeal behind the cockpit. He managed to unlatch the pilot's door and thrust it up and over so that it lay flush with the fuselage. He had to physically stand on the pilot's hip to get enough leverage to haul himself from the chopper. Did he smell gas? A new burst of fear shot through his body, and he jumped free. No sooner had his feet hit the grating than he was running off the landing pad in the direction of the accommodations block, a huge steel building that took up a third of the deck space on the massive rig. Above it all soared the drilling derrick, a spindly network of steel struts that looked like a miniature Eiffel Tower. Abdullah reached the corner of the block and turned back. He saw no fire, but smoke billowed from the Robinson's engine compartment, and it thickened by the second. And then he had the terrible thought that maybe the pilot wasn't dead. He didn't know what to do. The smoke grew more dense. He could see into the cockpit through the nose canopy. Was the pilot moving, or was the image being blurred by heat? He took a tentative step, as if to return to the chopper, when flames emerged at the base of the column of smoke. It wasn't the dramatic explosion of Hollywood or Hong Kong movie makers, but a steady fire that quickly engulfed the aircraft. Its roar drowned out the whir of the helo's engine. Smoke poured into the sky. Abdullah stood frozen. Already he was thinking that he'd be stuck out here forever. If this was an abandoned rig, there was no reason for anyone to come out to it. He was trapped. No, he told himself. He didn't just survive a plane crash to die on a deserted oil platform. The smoke, he thought. Surely someone will see the smoke and come to investigate. Then he remembered that smoke poured off every rig within 100 miles, and the fire wouldn't last for very long. The odds that a passing workboat or helicopter would see it before it burned itself out were too long. But if he saw one coming, he could start another fire to signal them. Yes, that's what he would do. He took several deep breaths. His hands weren't trembling so badly anymore, and the knot in his gut was easing. He grinned at his good fortune and was soon roaring with laughter. He'd be a hero once he got back to the office. They would probably give him a promotion or at least some paid time off. Abdullah had always been able to find the good in any situation. He was an optimist, always had been. He spotted a large fire extinguisher and, still concerned about an explosion, went for it anyway. The heat was brutal, but as he laid down the chemical suppressant, the flames diminished rapidly. It appeared the fire was fed off of gasoline that had leaked out of the helicopter, but most of it had fallen harmlessly through the metal grill. In just a minute, the flames were out. He was grateful to see the pilot's body hadn't been too ravaged by the fire. With that taken care of, he felt he could leave the rig's open deck and explore the accommodations block. There could be a working radio left inside. He retraced his steps and quickly found a hatchway that led into the interior of the 4-story block. It was padlocked shut. Undeterred, Abdullah scoured the deck until he found a length of steel pipe that would suit his purpose. He threaded it through the shiny chain and heaved. The links didn't even rattle, but the pad eye welded to the side of the building, twisted, and then tore free. He set aside the pipe and hauled on the door. It creaked on its hinges, setting his teeth on edge. It hadn't been opened for months. The hallway beyond was draped in murky shadow. From inside a small pocket sewn to the sleeve of his coveralls, he pulled out a penlight and twisted it on. It had been issued by the ministry and cast a harsh white light that belied its small size. The walls and deck were steel, utilitarian, and free of dust. It wasn't that they'd been cleaned. It was just that with no human presence, there was nothing to create dust in the sealed structure. He peered into several offices. The furniture had been left behind, and a 3 years out-of-date calendar, but there were no files or paperwork of any kind. Even the mundane items like staplers and spare pens were gone. Although the rig was old, it was still much too valuable to be left abandoned like this. If nothing more, she represented several $1 million worth of scrap metal. He knew it wasn't unusual for platforms to go unused for months at a time, but years? It didn't make sense. At the end of the hallway was a staircase leading up to the next level. He climbed it quickly. It was hot inside the steel box, which had been baking all day in the tropical sun. There were 2 doors leading off the landing. One led to another hallway and probably the crew's rooms. When he opened the second, he was hit by a wall of chilled air. The change in temperature was so acute, he staggered back a step before moving into the vast room beyond.
"What the hell?"
he said aloud, not sure whether or not to believe what his eyes were telling him. And then it finally dawned on him. He was on the J-61. Of all the rotten luck, this was the one rig that was off-limits to all ministry personnel. He didn't know the reason behind the order, only that it came from on high, and he'd been told in no uncertain terms that he was to never, ever set foot on this platform for any reason. But he didn't understand. What was the big deal? All he saw were a bunch of,
"Hey, you!"
The voice had come from behind him. Someone had approached down the hallway. Abdullah turned, raising his hands in a placating gesture.
"I'm sorry. You see, my helicopter
The man slammed a fist into Abdullah's stomach with enough force to knock him off his feet. Before he could even think about defending himself, he was struck again, a punch to the temple that stunned him into paralysis. And then a heavy boot crashed into his face, and Abdullah's world went black. He came to slowly, like that morning after he and some friends had flouted Islamic tenets and gotten blind drunk. His head ached, his stomach was on fire, and he could barely open his eyes. He saw nothing but blurred edges and blobs of light. Nothing made sense. He heard men's voices and tried to turn his head. His vertebrae felt fused. He had never been in so much pain in his life. What happened, he wondered. The voices, the man, a guard perhaps, the beating. It came back in a rush. He tried to move but realized he was tied to a chair. Panic seized him, sharpened his senses a little, and to his horror, he realized he was back in the helicopter, strapped in next to the singed corpse of the pilot. Someone had flipped the bird back onto its landing struts and secured him into his seat. He tried to unclasp the harness, but the buckle had been wound with duct tape so many times it was a big silver lump in his lap. He felt movement. They were pushing the chopper. He looked out, just as the horizon soared over his head. The windshield was filled with a view of the ocean, and then the acceleration hit him. He was falling, strapped helplessly, as the chopper plummeted off the rig. The Robinson hit the water at near terminal velocity, snapping Abdullah's neck and mercifully ending his life before he could drown. 20 minutes later, when the administrator of the rig he was supposed to start inspecting contacted the ministry, an alert was sounded. Rescue helicopters and patrol boats were launched immediately. Of the Robinson, its pilot, and its lone passenger, no trace was ever found. One canny chopper jock even circled rig J-61, just in case, but it looked as deserted as ever, because any trace of the fire had been studiously wiped clean. The secret it harbored was safe once again.